walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and today my guest is Renee Kingson, and the founder of the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, a former beef cattle ranch that under Kingson's direction, after she went vegan, became a farm sanctuary. If this sounds like a somewhat improbable tale, there are other quirky or colorful storylines to the Kingson narrative, including that the man who owned the ranch she converted is someone she married, divorced, and remarried. At various times, she's also been a professional singer and recording artist, a publicist, a realtor, and founder owner of a wellness spa. These days, in addition to looking after the animals on the ranch, Kingson advocates for the importance and impact of adopting a vegan lifestyle and makes herself available to assist those at ranches who may want to undergo the same transformation that the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary did. We'll hear the cattle ranch to farm sanctuary transformation story and other aspects of the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary operation when I speak with Renee Kingson in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, I'll play back a brief interview I recorded last night with Nolan Martinez, an animal advocate who's 10 years old. Nolan was at the recent hearing held by Florida's Fish and Wildlife Commission to express views about, among other topics, elephant rides. So we'll hear from him later in the show. Also, a brief programming note for next week. I won't be here, but Bev Capshaw will be. She'll be sitting in. And, of course, her editions, as you probably know by now, of Talking Animals are always fun and fabulous. So it's Bev next week, and I'll be back the week after. Right now, though, let's get to Renee with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Renee Kingson on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning. How are you, David?
Good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me. I'm just really, really honored to be here.
Oh, that's very nice. So, of course, I look forward to discussing your transformation and the corresponding transformation that yielded Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. But I often think it's instructive to hear some earlier stories of an animal person's life, especially when that person has reinvented their life so significantly. So let's hark all the way back to your childhood, if we could, for a moment. What did animals mean to you when you were a kid?
I always loved animals. I was the little girl that used to actually bury dirt daubers that would die when we were remodeling the back of our house. There was a bunch of dirt daubers and all the wood and I used to have little funerals for dirt daubers in matchboxes. So not only did I love cats and dogs and guinea pigs and ferrets and rabbits, you know, I even loved dirt daubers.
Okay, well, that's a true measure, I think, of someone who, a kid who loves animals. So, and this was in Texas, I gather.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally in the heart of Texas.
Right. So you're a Texas native, and that's where you've been throughout your life, if I follow you then.
Yes. Yes. I've been totally in the heart of Texas. I've lived other places, but Texas is my homeland.
What about when you were in the adult years? I mean, how important were animals then? Did they remain sort of the devotion you had to the dirt daubers and others remain steadfast throughout your years into your adulthood?
You know, I loved animals even as an adult, but I never equated loving animals with farm animals. It just that very idea was never, you know, was never put together in my mind.
Right.
You know, I always had lots of cats and dogs and ferrets and, you know, I even like snakes, you know, and so But I never, ever, ever considered loving a cow or a pig or a chicken.
All right. Well, we'll get into that later love story that did unfold in a moment. So it sounds like whether you were a kid or at least early part of your adulthood, the conventional animals, but some others too. So it was cats and dogs early on, the dirt daubers that you, of course, paid the great respect to. But also it sounds like ferrets and snakes, not necessarily your standard issue cat and dog thing. So it sounds like you always had an interest in sort of broader animals or more than just the usual pets.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
Always.
Now, it also seems like you've had more careers than most people could probably cram into two lifetimes. For instance, let's talk at least a little bit about your singing and recording career. When did that start?
Well, in high school, I entered a beauty pageant my senior year. I was very shy, introverted, kind of up to that point because of family things that were going on, you know, kind of the thing in my home was there was some domestic violence with my mom and dad. And so I was kind of quiet and shy, but I always had this talent of singing, but only my best friends heard me. But they convinced me to enter this beauty pageant, and I did. And I was blown away by the reception and the audience. I got a standing ovation, and it resulted in me really discovering something very unique about myself. And that was that I loved to perform, and I had a really, really natural knack for making people feel good when I did. So I started entering all these, jams, you know, like the musician jams and, talent shows and all of that. And I just started winning left and right and having so much fun and developing a following. And the next thing you know, I decided I'm going to put a band together. But I didn't have any equipment, I didn't have any musicians, I didn't have anything. So, you know, I went out there and just started booking my band, my imaginary band. Now, I had an imaginary band. I just said, you know what, I'm going to go to all of these places that I've done all of these open mics and all these jams, everybody that knew me, you know, I'm going to go out there and tell these owners a little white lie. Because in my mind, the band was there. And so I told them I had a band, we were rehearsing in my garage, and I'd be ready to perform in 6 weeks. And then I got like several weeks of work booked on weekends. And then I went out and got a band.
Well, I love this story in so many ways. I mean, many of us grew up with imaginary friends or playmates, but an imaginary band, I don't think is nearly as common. So I like that. And I also like the gumption. I mean, you hear stories about people who call up and disguise their voice and say, I'm the agent for Renee King, and I'd like to talk to you about bookings. But you really took this to a whole nother level, it sounds like.
Yeah, because, I've always had a very active imagination and inner life. I have a world inside that is very real to me.
Yeah.
And I've developed it over time. Yes, it's very, very real and rich.
So was it the real or the imaginary band that recorded the album?
It was the real band.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And that was Queen of Honky Tonk?
Well, that was one of my productions. I used to produce Texas women in country music.
Oh, I see.
Yes. The album I did that you're referring to was called The Queen of Honky Tonk. Absolutely.
Well, that's a pretty grand thing, although I guess that partly at least played off of King, right? So the King and that's great. So that can be with either real or imagined bandmates. That can be a pretty tough, grueling life. At what point did you say, you know, I love music and I love performing, but I just don't know if I can keep doing this anymore?
Well, I did it for many years. It was my full-time job. I traveled on the road. It was, it looked like a very glamorous lifestyle, but it was very hard, like you just said. And so I just started feeling like I wanted more out of my life. I started it's not that I felt like I was getting old. It's just that I wanted more out of my life. I wanted to do more. That's when I started producing more music. I did, I did a musical. It was called Jezebel, and it was about a singer that had kind of gotten washed up, if you will. You know, it was kind of like a time in my life when I was looking for Mr. Right. And so this musical, it was a great musical. It was at the Houston House Theater downtown Houston. And so I did that, and I started producing other talent.
I see. And then I believe other careers include a stint as a realtor, which I gather you enjoyed some pretty notable success as a realtor.
I did. You know, I've always been an entrepreneur, Duncan. It's just been, you know, I've never attached myself to jobs like this is who and what I am. I've always lived my life as an expression of passion and, you know, a path or like an unfolding, you know, of what I'm supposed to be being in the world rather than doing.
Sure.
And living in that way, I've always been able to, you know, manifest, you know, the best of what I'm supposed to, because I really, really never was the type of person that enjoyed working for others. Although I did it. I did have some periods in my life where I had a real job and, you know, I punched a clock, but it was very, very few and far between. But I always found myself wanting to create, you know, jobs, wanting to create opportunities for myself, wanting to do things in the world that would better the world or better people's, you know, relationship with themselves, you know, or make them happy. I was always, you know, wanting to do that.
Well, it sounds like you punched the clock just enough to know, guess what? I don't really want to punch a clock. I want to do my own thing or start my own business or, again, including, as you say, making people feel better. There was, I guess, yet another chapter in your life story as the owner of a wellness spa, for example. So, I mean, that resume is dotted with all kinds of interesting, colorful entries, it looks like. So,
and it's totally, totally for real. It's everybody that really knows my past. In fact, I hesitate sometimes even talking about it because sometimes people are so like, what? And I'm just like, it's just no big deal to me. It's just,
yeah,
it's no big deal. But a lot of people are kind of like, you did that, all of that. I'm like, yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, to you, it's probably just the path that you traveled, but to others kind of looking in, it's like, oh my goodness, you did that and that. I can't imagine this. And that's great that you were on the road and playing music. And so a lot of things that people just don't encounter every day, much less string of those things, perhaps. So I'm sure that gets people sort of surprised, but also inspired and impressed on some levels, too. So let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Renee Kingson, and the founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, a former beef cattle ranch that she transformed into a farm sanctuary in the wake of her transformation herself to a vegan. So if you'd like to ask Renee a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So indeed, let's get to that central topic. So take me back to the ranch that you first arrived at some years ago. What was it like when you first got there in Angleton?
Well, when I first got here, I came here begrudgingly. I really wanted my husband to move to Shadow Creek Ranch, which is a suburb of Pearland where I sold real estate. I had a really, really strong career there. I was doing very well, and I didn't want to leave that because I was very successful. But I also really loved my husband, whom I was about to marry for the second time. And so he was convinced he was not going to sell the ranch. And so I decided to go ahead and move out here, high heels off, you know, but I didn't like it. I didn't like the dirt. I didn't like, you know, the mud. I just didn't like it. You know, it was, and I had no relationship to farm animals at the time. So it wasn't something I was really wanting to do. So I did my yoga, my meditation, and I told him, you know, you can do the farm thing, the ranch thing, all that, but, you know, I'm going to do my thing.
You know, it's interesting as you say that. I mean, I know obviously the story shifts considerably, but in this part of the telling, it is interesting given what we've already established that you were such an avid animal lover as a kid, as an early adult, that, and also that you had this, you know, I've always had sort of this very active imagination, that there wasn't like some sort of leap that you made early on in your mind of like, well, I don't really know farm animals, but I've always loved animals of all kinds. Let me give this a shot. Maybe this will work out great. And, you know, maybe a snake or a ferret or this or that is not all that different from some of these animals that are here on the ranch. But I guess you were doing it so begrudgingly that there wasn't even room to make that allowance.
Well, what it is, Duncan, honestly, is the built-in disconnect that we are all wired to. We're all wired to this disconnect regarding farm animals. It's, you know, our entire culture, you know, has wired us not to see farm animals as sentient beings worthy of love and respect. We're not, if we start having that connection, then we don't see them anymore. And so heaven forbid that happened, right?
Right. But on the other hand, even though that's absolutely right, and we'll get into just how much that figures into the current incarnation of the ranch as the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, but still a lot of us drive by, you end up in an area and you see cows on the side of the road or whatever, and you think, wow, that's cool, or you talk to them, or you maybe even stop the car. And so, you know, you're not necessarily put off by them, even if you don't have much familiarity, again, if at least presupposing that you're a bit of an animal person fundamentally. So it just seems interesting that at first it's like, well, I just don't have any interest in these critters.
No, you know, I didn't have any interest because I knew that they, I mean, subconsciously I knew they were going to die. I needed
yeah.
to end up as food. And so it's not, I couldn't have any interest in them. And that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, I was a very, very, and have been for years, you know, devout, you know, student of yoga. I've taught yoga all my life for years. I have a deep meditation practice. I believed in the concept of ahimsa, which is nonviolence. So I couldn't dare even consider having a relationship with these animals. You know, it would cause a psychological breakdown in my psyche, as it would anybody.
Okay, so it was really more about fundamental beliefs and spirituality and things that you had, rather than the first picture you painted was like, okay, my husband really wanted to go here. I didn't really want to. I wanted to stay back where I was selling real estate, but I sort of went along begrudgingly to him. So initially, it sounds like just kind of the whole enterprise was like, all right, well, you go do that. I'm going to, as much as I can, do what I do. But it sounds like it really, even early on, you were already starting to think about the fate of the animals that did live there.
Yeah, and it was very subconscious. It was, I know now, looking back and reflecting on all of this, that my aversion was to the fact that I was having to confront this very, very difficult issue.
Let's, before we get sort of delve more into that, let's get to the fundamental details briefly of the ranch. So tell us acres and the animals that were there, a number of animals, et cetera. Just give us a little bit of a picture of the beginning part of your time there.
You want to know how many animals when I first moved here?
Right, yeah, animals and just acres, just trying to get a sense, a little bit of a picture of the place, at least early on.
Sure. So when I first got here, it's a 96-acre spread. Mm-hmm. There was 29 approximate cows, or bovine, as you want to call them, because mm-hmm. there was a combination of cows, bulls, steers, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
He had dogs, cats. There was a few chickens, you know, not many, just a few. And so that's basically it.
Yeah.
No horses, no other animals. It was a small cow-calf operation.
Yeah.
My husband, you know, worked for Dow Chemical his whole life. This was a retirement investment of his, and he planned on, you know, retiring, you know, really, really, you know, great with this little operation as a subsidy to his retirement, and I blew it for him.
All right, well, let's find out how that worked. So you sound like a pretty sizable spread, 96 acres for 29 cows, bulls, steers, etc. So sounds like pretty sprawling. So relative to when you guys first moved there, how quickly did you start to say, hey, this is bothering me?
It started happening pretty quick. The first time that the babies were rounded up to go to the sale barn, I went out there. See, well, let me just back up just a moment.
Sure.
Before that, my husband wanted me to help him, like with gates and, you know, with hay and all this. And I never really wanted to do all that. But, you know, I didn't want to participate in all that kind of stuff. So when it was time to load up those calves to go to the sale barn, I found that part of it, you know, I started kind of peeking over the fence and watching what they were doing, and I was trying to make sense of it because I was watching them round up and how they would round up the babies, how they would bait the babies into the red trailer and keep the larger cows from getting in, you know, and make it to where only the young six-month-olds could get inside. And once there was, you know, six or seven or eight calves inside, you know, the door would slam shut and the trailer would go off to the sale barn and the mothers would follow the trailer all the way up the fence line and they would cry for days. That was the first time that I broke down uncontrollably because I just couldn't believe I was actually a party to this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in my face, you know. I didn't see it. I didn't have to feel this. I mean, my emotions, I guess, for animals are so great that when I finally made the somewhat of a connection, it's almost like a short circuit connection, because I didn't make the connection and just go, oh, I'm vegan. No, it was a short circuit. It was as if there was a short in my system. And for just a moment, I had this feeling and this awareness for these animals that I've never had before. And it was shocking to my system. It was like, oh my God, I'm not supposed to feel this. And I had to go right back to being a rancher's wife, because if I'd have stayed connected, I couldn't have survived.
Yeah, and I guess as an aside, we should point out that as yet another part of the sort of colorful Renee King sonnet narrative, that the husband you're referring to, you had married, divorced, and remarried at this point. So there was some interesting history there before things got a little testy on the ranch front.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, so you see these animals being led into the trailer and then let off, and the image and even the sound that people can all maybe imagine of the moms crying, is that's difficult even just strictly in the imagination. So I can only imagine what the sounds that you were haunted by were like. So after that day where you peeked over and saw this for the first time, what sort of timetable are we talking about before things really started to kick in and you underwent some very different sort of views and actions?
It took 4 years, and it was agony, because the awakening that I had was gradual. It was not sudden, because I was married to a rancher, and that's the every time that it would be time to load up the babies again, it would get worse and worse. And so Tommy, tried to get me more involved in wanting to be part of the business early on, probably right after that first, or it might have been before it, actually. I think it was before the first time. That's probably, yeah, that it was. It was before the first time I saw the babies go to the cell barn. Tommy wanted me more interested in what he was doing out here. So he told me about these two babies that needed a mama, these two calves. And that kind of piqued my ears. I said, babies? Oh, So that, that got my attention, because these were babies without a mama. So one of those babies was Rowdy Girl, and the other baby died very young because she didn't get her colostrum. She just didn't thrive at all. So
yeah.
Rowdy Girl did thrive, and I fed her every day, and she became, really, really close to me. And that's why I started peeking over the fence and watching. It's because I started falling in love with this calf, Rowdy Girl, whom I didn't even see as food. It was just a baby that needed milk, that needed a mama. And so that was the relationship. All of a sudden, as a result of that experience, I started seeing other babies out there with their mamas, and I could make no distinction whatsoever between Rowdy Girl and them. And I was like, oh my God, they're all little Rowdy Girls out there. All of those babies, have a mama and love their mom, and they're fixing to go to their death, and the mamas are going to, I would feel horrible. There was no way I would let them, I would never, ever let him take Rowdy Girl. I knew that. And so when this all started shifting for me, it was as if, every time Tommy would get ready to sell the calves, I would get more and more depressed, and I would get more vocal. I wasn't vegan. I was just like, why the hell are we doing this? Why are we in this business? It's not right, that we do this. And I wanted to know things like, why are we, eating, meat from the store when we have all of these cows out here that are grass fed? I said, how come we don't eat our own animals? It doesn't make sense to me.
Wow.
So, yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I just started having these epiphanies like that. I just started waking up little by little to these nuances and these facts about my life, that I would go to the store and I would buy filet mignon or hamburger meat or whatever, and I would come home and cook it. Yet we had all these cows out here that we never processed or never slaughtered. We sent them off to be slaughtered. And my husband had a real hard time answering that question. He didn't answer it for some time. He would steer away from the question. He would don't ask me that, Renee. We don't talk about that. And, don't ask me that question. Well, finally, I said, I want to know the answer.
Yeah.
And so he finally told me it's because he knew these cows and he couldn't eat cows he knew.
That part of the story, we often talk in this world or on this show about cognitive dissonance, right? So people who say I'm an animal lover and they have a dog or a cat or some combination thereof, but have no conflict to speak of, at least, about eating animals. What was going on at the ranch, at least those 4 years for you, and apparently, as it turns out, for your husband, was a whole different level and much deeper and more complex form of cognitive dissonance, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. totally almost made me go crazy.
Yeah.
Because I was faced full on with my demons. So.
All right. We're going to pick up more of that story in a moment, but I do want to get a caller involved who's been holding for a while. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Renee Kingsonen.
Yeah, you know, this testimony that your guest is giving, this is one of the main reasons that Talking Animals is such a valuable and unique show. There's nothing like it anywhere. And your testimony, it's a spiritual awakening, it's a conscience awakening, it's an empathy awakening, all of which are very discouraged in what Chris Hedges calls America, the empire of delusion. And humans in general have been taught that all the other animals on this planet are here for us to do whatever we want to them. They don't have any rights. They don't have any feelings. Now, one thing I've noticed in going to a lot of farm animal sanctuaries is the government, tax codes, municipalities, they often actually harass farm animal sanctuaries, and they certainly don't give you any breaks. It's very hard for a farm animal sanctuary to stay in business. What is your business model? And finally, Duncan has had on Cy Montgomery, the incredible author and researcher who wrote the book The Good, Good Pig, which shows that every, quote, farm animal is a person and is like what you're talking about, the babies being ripped away. That has to be more widely distributed. You're a great storyteller, and you can reach people's hearts. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, caller.
Oh, thank you so much. That was great. I really enjoyed what you shared just now. Our business model. Well, you know, it's an evolution of a model, because when I first started Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, you know, I have a lot of business background in my whole life, and I've created business plans, marketing plans for businesses that I really thought about creating. The concept of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary was a matter of the heart. It became an expression of my deepest yearning to free myself of the conditioning that we're all enslaved to. And I saw it, I felt it, and I just knew that I was going to do any and everything I could. And I knew, because of my background and everything that I had experienced all my life as an entrepreneur, all the businesses I had, I knew that I could do this. I just felt it deep in my gut. I didn't know anything about how that business plan was going to unfold originally. I just knew I had to save these cows from slaughter, and the rest was going to because of my intuition. And so early on, I was talking to Farm Sanctuary, which is, in Acton and L.A., Los Angeles, they have sanctuaries all over New York. And I was talking to them, and their legal counsel actually at the time helped me develop, a preliminary model, if you will. We got our nonprofit within 4 months, and we created our board of directors. And so it has been an evolution. You know, now our business model is all about, you know, evolving into the future, you know, 10 years ahead, because we're going to have the rancher advocacy. We do have the rancher advocacy program and our Families Choosing Compassion program. And the sanctuary itself gets its income from we have a membership program that is growing. We have about 280 some odd members right now, of sustaining members that donate every month, like a minimum of $15 a month. Some do more. That's what we count on.
Mm-hmm.
Every month. And then we have folks that adopt the animals, like sponsor them. They don't take them home, but they sponsor them.
Sure.
And we also have events. We have events, a lot of events, and we bring in special speakers. And so, you know, we sustain ourselves with that. And then we have a beautiful foundation that has discovered us and loves our mission, especially the Rancher Advocacy Program. And they have really, really, really helped us to expand our vision into the future. And we are creating right now our new vision for the new location that we're moving to just within 90 days.
Oh, wow. The caller raised a question that I was, of course, going to, because I'm still sort of interested in this. I mean, you've laid out what the key sources of revenue for the Rowdy Girl Sanctuary are. But I was also curious, as part of the transformation, since you outlined that your husband had retired but very much looked at the cattle ranch operation as something to supplement his retirement income. So when you were shifting gears and saying, hey, this is what I really would think this should become, and especially early on, probably very little prospects for any income to speak of, what was his reaction?
Oh, my God. he thought I'd lost my mind. And, you know, and you know, granted I had, but, you know, because I had to lose, everything I had ever thought was normal to do this.
Yeah.
You know, but he thought I was crazy. And, you know, because I was watching slaughterhouse videos on a daily basis, because, you know, I had never seen all this footage. When I started watching the footage, I became so shocked that no one had ever shown me this. Here I was in my 50s, and I did not know this was going on in the world. You know, and I considered myself a very educated woman, open-minded, and, you know, knowledgeable of what's going on. And I did not know this. And so, you know, when I started putting myself in a position to really know deeply what these animals all over the world were going through every second of the day, I became mortified. I was shocked beyond belief. I told my husband, we can't do this anymore. I put my foot down. And that's when, you know, the conversations started happening about, you know, the fact that I wanted to buy his cows, you know, that if he took the sale barn, took the animals to the sale barn, you know, one more time, I was going to drive down there. I was going to bring them all back home, and I was going to use his credit card to buy them all back. I mean, I really started threatening my husband. I threatened him, and
yeah,
he knew I meant it.
Right. Well, it's tricky territory for a marriage that's already been through one divorce, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that was the whole point, is we thought nothing would ever shake our marriage. And here, me going vegan was the catalyst for possibly causing us a second divorce.
Yeah. But spoiler alert, you have dodged the second divorce, correct or not correct?
Oh, no, he's vegan, you know.
Right. Okay. So he came over to your side, so there didn't have to be a second divorce. Right. Okay, cool. So yeah, Tell us a little bit, because we're in our final moments, but there's definitely a few other things I was hoping to explore with you. But one thing I guess I didn't realize in preparing for the conversation was about the new location. So tell us at least briefly a little bit about that.
Well, and the reason why you didn't is because we didn't know yet, but we have signed a contract. We closed April 30th on a property in Waldor, Texas, which is just an hour or so from Austin and an hour or so from San Antonio.
Mm.
We're in the heart of Texas, right in smack dab in the heart. And it's 147 acres. We are right now, you know, working with an architect to develop our visitor center, our barn, our medical facilities, our bunkhouses, our cabins. I mean, this is all going to be a beautiful, you know, facility, state-of-the-art operations for all the large animals, you know, because we've really been limited here and been really hindered, you know, because, you know, we were a working cattle ranch, not a state-of-the-art facility, which we're becoming. And so we're going to have a capital campaign that's going to be coming out as a result of this. And our foundation, you know, has helped us get the seed money we need to be able to make the move. And we're doing it.
Wow.
Closed April 30th, and our property is not technically on the market, but our realtor sent some people out here just a few days ago. And it looks like this place, fingers crossed, may be purchased before it ever goes on the market and become a yoga and retreat center. And wouldn't that be absolutely divine for Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, next phase here on this property, Matt? And the reason we're moving is because of all the massive floodplain that is here. We've been flooded twice. It's no fun at all and dangerous to evacuate, you know, as many animals as we have. We have 133 now, you know, but we have evacuated as many as, you know, 80-something animals, 90-something animals. And it's terrifying when you have to evacuate on purpose to save lives and also put your own lives in danger.
So the new location is not prone to flooding, I take it, at least by comparison.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Just the bottom, just the very bottom of the area, which is down by the creek, which is hardly even 20 acres of it. You know, it's down right on the bottom, you know, could flood. But that's a good thing, actually, because that'll be great for having water in drought seasons. But there's no flooding in the upper, you know, main areas of the pasture at all.
Gotcha. Well, we're in our final moments. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Stress. My guest is Renee Kingson, and the founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, a former beef cattle ranch in Angleton, Texas, that she, after going vegan, transformed into a farm sanctuary. And as we're hearing, there's more evolution just around the corner to a new location, etc. But if you'd like to quickly join the conversation, you can call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And just to back up for a moment, an email that came in a moment ago or two that I just want to read says, the problem is this is an emotional movement. Many farmers are detached from that because they They're just looking at the money they will make. With our current political people in the White House showing no emotion for people or animals, we have a big job ahead of us to turn the tables back to humanity. So thank you for that email. So by my math, Renee, the new location is going to have more than an acre per animal. Is that right?
No, but I mean,
it's going to average that. Didn't you say it's 147 acres, and don't you currently have 133 animals?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's pretty darn good. Let's briefly, in our remaining time, maybe we'll squeeze something else in, too, but I think it's fitting for this kind of show and what we've already covered to talk a little bit about some of the animals that do live there, and I think it's incumbent on us to start with Rowdy Girl.
Yes. Yeah, Rowdy Girl, she's the leader of the pack now. Very interesting. When we went from a cattle ranch to a sanctuary, Rowdy Girl, it was as if something you would have seen in a movie. She ran to the front of the herd, and she has assumed the lead of the herd ever since.
Wow.
I get chill bumps every time I talk about it, because I know that cow... I know, and I really do believe that when I went vegan, and even before, because I was so in tune with her, I really do believe that these animals have a consciousness beyond our perception.
Mm-hmm.
I believe these animals speak to us in the silence. If only we just get quiet and just be with them. And I really do honor and believe that Rowdy Girl is the reason for Rowdy Girl Sanctuary.
Mm.
That she carried this message for me to deliver to the world. And she is an amazing, amazing being.
Well, I love the story, and I also love the image of her running to sort of like, as things were changing, to like get to the front and lead the movement on the animal side of things. So that's great.
She did that. It's a fact.
All right. Well, just in our last moment or so, Renee, tell me a little bit more about the Rancher Advocacy Program and how it works. If I'm not mistaken, I guess it's basically for ranches that maybe want to follow suit in the same sort of transformation you did. You helped them do so?
But we want to help ranchers find a way to make money with their operation, because not everybody is going to have the entrepreneurial background like that I have that
sure.
is able to kind of manage all these aspects. And so what we're doing is I've collaborated with professionals all over the world, vegan professionals, and we've got a coalition now. And I say all over the world because there really is people in like Canada and Australia and all in, you know, on our team. And so I don't mean that it's in every part of the world, but in several places in the world, people are on our team. And what we do, like with the Barrett Family Farm, for instance, you know, we are transforming a former cattle ranch chicken farm, you know, into a mushroom business. And we just retained the mushroom consultant. And we work from the bottom up with these farms. So we interview them and we find out exactly what their needs are. This particular farm, you know, was about to lose everything. And so I solicited, to funders that I know to help them. And because they believe in RAP, which is the acronym for Rancher Advocacy Program, because they believe in RAP, they have helped me help them. And so we've taken care of them for the last several months financially so they didn't go under. And now we are, creating a second mortgage for them, and we are getting the money together for them to start a new business.
Wow. So it sounds like it's very specifically tailored case by case for a given ranch that does seek your help.
Yeah. There's one in Texas in Giddings, Star Love Ranch, that we're working with. And then another one that just opened up in Huntsville, Texas, that just submitted their form. And then we have one in North Carolina that's also on our radar.
That's great. Well, along those lines, we can let folks know, too, that on Facebook, there's a Facebook page that's called Vegan Journal of a Rancher's Wife, where, among other things, the Rancher Advocacy Program is discussed, and there's ways to contact people about that. But, Renee, we have just about reached the end of our time. We've been speaking with Renee Kingson, again, the founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. Again, the website for all kinds of great information to meet the animals and see Rowdy Girl herself and others is rowdygirlsanctuary.org. So, Renee, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And thanks for all your great work.
Thank you so much, Duncan. It's been a real pleasure, and I've enjoyed this interview thoroughly.
Oh, thanks again. All right, take care. Good luck. See ya.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
In a few moments, I'll air my conversation with Nolan Martinez, who's concerned about animal welfare, for example, expressing his opposition to elephant rides at a recent Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission hearing. And again, Nolan is 10 years old. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. This is Tom Papa with a piece called Pet People in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
We gotta go somewhere, though. This baby is just killing us. We had to have a baby, though. It was really getting to a point. My wife was becoming one of those weird pet people. Like, anytime someone would tell a story about their kid doing something like scoring a goal in soccer, my wife would chime in, "Oh, that's like Gracie when she bats the ball down the hallway." Shut up. Pet people are very aggressive now. Have you noticed that? Pet people, very, very mean. If you don't like pets, they think you're like a Nazi or something. You don't like pets? You're so mean. How can you not like pets? You're so mean. Really, I'm mean. I'm not the one keeping a wild animal hostage in my apartment. No, but he loves me. Really. Open the door. See how much he loves you as he's hightailing it to Pennsylvania.
That was Tom Papa with a piece entitled Pet People, taken from his album Calm, Cool, and Collected. Now it's time to hear the interview I recorded last night with Nolan Martinez, an animal advocate who's 10 years old. Here is that conversation with Nolan Martinez on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Hello, Nolan. How are you?
Good.
So let me ask you this, Nolan. How did you first become interested in animals and protecting animals?
Well, my mom, she's an FVA for Voices for Animals, and then I saw about the animals and stuff, and I was like, they shouldn't be treated this way.
Yeah, what did you hear or see that about the way they were being treated that bothered you?
It bothered me that they had to be, like, trapped in these cages and, like, they had to be rode on and all that.
Right, so just kind of the tougher treatment of animals bothered you.
Yeah.
So have you participated in any protests of the way animals are treated or how they're handled at certain places?
Yeah, I've gone to protests with my mom. I've protested against the Ringling Brothers Circus.
Okay, well, that was pretty effective because now the Ringling Brothers Circus doesn't have, they still have animals sometimes, unfortunately, but at least they stopped using elephants, so that helped a lot, don't you think?
Yeah.
And any other protests that you've been to that you can think of?
I went to SeaWorld.
Okay, SeaWorld, yeah. That's another really important place to protest because, again, the killer whales have it really tough as to some of the other animals there. So that's really important to call attention to that.
Yeah.
So, and then I know that, I think it was about a week ago, there was this big hearing, like the Florida Wildlife Commission had the hearing where people could go around at this big room and talk about issues that they felt strongly about. And I understand that you spoke out against elephant rides.
Yeah.
So what did you tell the people? Like, what were you trying to explain to them that why you think elephant rides are not a good idea?
I tried to explain to them that they weren't a good idea because, when you get on the elephant, like, you're kind of hurting its back, and the elephant, it has to, like, carry its body around and doesn't want all that extra weight on them. And then, like, when you ride on them, they're, like, just trapped in this tiny space.
Yeah, I know. It's very tough. When I used to live in California, we lived down the street from the place, the fairgrounds, where they would have the annual county fair. And right when you came in the entrance, there were elephant rides. And most of the time, it made me want to, like, just turn around and not even go to the fair, because the first thing I saw, at least when I walked in, was those elephants just doing kind of those little loops to give those rides. And the elephants seemed so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, did people listen carefully when you talked about why you don't think elephant rides are a good idea?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So you probably felt good, like, hey, people are listening. Maybe I'm making a difference, and maybe they'll stop doing elephant rides or not do as many elephant rides as they used to.
And I wrote it down too on a piece of paper.
Yeah, that's right. I think I saw a picture of that form. Where, so you not only got to talk about it, but then you could put it on paper, again, exactly what your concerns were and why elephant rides weren't a good thing. And then I guess they were going to give those to commissioners or some of the people who make those decisions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very good. I'm very impressed. That's one of the reasons I told your mom that I wanted to speak to you, because I just think it's really great for someone who's 10 years old to already have that kind of concern for animals, and more than just the concern, to go to protests or to go to the kind of hearing that you went to last week. And I just think that's a really great inspirational thing, and hopefully will influence other younger people to take those interests maybe sooner than later. So what do your friends think about your concern for animals? What do they think about when you're doing protests or going to the hearing like last week?
Well, most of my friends, they still eat meat, and they, like, some of them, I don't know, they may still, like, do elephant rides, so.
Okay. So they feel. Yeah, oh, I see. Because you think they might still be pretty different in terms of what they think and how they view animals compared to how you do.
Probably.
Yeah, shoot. Well, I was going to ask, are any of your friends advocates kind of like you are? Do you have a friend or two that does feel the same way, that sometimes you maybe talk to about animals and maybe even go to protests or other events with?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. So really, it's, you sort of feel like you're, at least of the people in your class and the people that you know your age, you're the only one that feels this strongly, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, how do you like school overall, though?
School can be fun sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes maybe not so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about school? What's your favorite topic or your favorite thing to do at school?
My favorite subject is math, and my favorite, like, special is PE.
Oh, good. Do you like sports?
Yeah.
Oh, great. What's your favorite sport?
Football.
Okay, cool. That's great. So we just have another little moment here, maybe, Nolan. So if you had to, going back to the animals a little bit, if you had to sort of pick one thing that you think is the most important information about animals and how to treat them better to tell people, like, that are listening right now to the radio show, what do you think that one thing would be?
Probably the one thing that would be is just not keeping them in these small spaces, because they need to move around. And when they move around, they can, like, get to their, like, family.
Right. So it sounds like captivity and things like zoos and stuff are a big concern of yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because, again, many of them are kept away from their families or taken from their families when they're very young. So I think that's very hard and very sad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Nolan, I appreciate you making the time to talk to me. And again, like I say, I just think it's so great and impressive and inspirational that you're involved with these protests and went to the hearing and just feel so strongly. Even in some ways, it's even harder because it sounds like your friends don't feel the same way, so you can't really share those interests with them. But it also sounds like it doesn't stop you at all from feeling that way and expressing those things and participating in meetings and protests. That's also pretty impressive. So you're doing a really, really good job and doing really important work. And again, I thank you for that, and congratulations for all that good work. And I know you're going to do even more good work as you get older and older, right?
Yeah,
good. All right, Nolan, well, thank you so much for making the time to talk to me. I really, really appreciate it, and keep up the good work, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye, you're welcome.
Okay, my thanks again to Nolan Martinez for speaking with me, and sometimes you're a little blue about our leadership and where things are heading, whatever. It's super inspiring, I think, to know there's a Nolan Martinez out there and just going to be doing great work on animals' behalf, but maybe more broadly even than that. So anyway, great speaking with him. Coming up at 11 on WMF is Rob Lurie with Radioactivity, continuing our four-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott in the All Souls edition of It's the Music. And again, a reminder, next week, Bev Capshaw will sit in for me here on Talking Animal. Meanwhile, on today's show, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a copy of Aaron Greenwood's wonderful book, Your Robot Dog Will Die, now out in paperback. But the prize I'm offering today is the hardcover edition. I'm Duncan Schatz. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune, which is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMF in the last 90 days. And again, there will be a prize, the copy of Aaron Greenwood's Your Robot Dog Will Die, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song by an artist whose not been around in a while, but coming through town in the coming months, if that's any sort of cryptic clue. It's named that animal tune on Talking Animals. If people can name that animal tune, we'll take those guesses after the show is finished, because we have reached the very end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Again, next week, Bev Capshaw will be here in my absence. I'll be back the week after. I invite you to join her for that. Always fun and great, great music and more. So, also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast, links to the Facebook page, Twitter feed, Instagram, and more. That's all on TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening to Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa.